You're listening to Over the Top, a Great War podcast. I'm your host, Richard Cantu. Please join me as I talk about World War I history and preserve the stories from the soldiers who lived through it. Welcome back, folks. This is episode 62. This isn't the Verdun episode that I promised I was going to open up with, and I do apologize for that. But this is a special episode. This is going to be a question and answer episode. And I'll tell you why. I kind of got away from answering messages on social media, Instagram, just because a lot of times I just wasn't getting anything. So randomly I'll go in there, check some, and there'll be a message and I'll answer. But this time, when I checked my messages, I actually had a bunch in there. And I said, you know what? Maybe this would be a good time to answer some of these questions on a podcast. Because why not? I have a podcast and sometimes it's good to interact. Although I'm not really interacting with anybody one-on-one, I'm taking some of your listeners' questions and I'm going to do my best to answer them. And they're all good questions. So let me dive into this. By the way, hope everybody is doing great. It is Monday, December 11th. 7:30 my time in California. So if you hear some noise in the background, I got a full house. My wife's in there watching a Hallmark Christmas movie. Of course, the silent guest who sometimes joins me decided he wanted to watch a Hallmark movie with my wife, so he's not in here with me. My stepson's home. He's watching Monday Night Football, so you might hear some of that. My son's home from the Marine Corps, so you might hear him going around. So I do apologize if you hear some background noise. I'm hoping I can edit this out, but I got a full house and I wanted to get this episode out to answer some of these questions. So here we go. First one, and by the way, this isn't scripted. The only thing I really have written down is a list of books and movies, but I'll get to that shortly. So plan is not to do a lot of editing, just jump in this. Okay, so first one comes from a gentleman named Jake H. And I won't say the last name because a lot of people don't dig that. So I'll just say Jake H. He asked, can you recommend links on what I would do if I had 2 weeks to explore the battlefields of the Great War? Any links and recommendations would be appreciated. It's a great question, Jake. And this really comes down to, you know, how much time you have and what area you want to go to. Do you want to go to the Western Front? Do you want to go to the Italian front? Do you want to see the Eastern Front? Do you want to see Gallipoli? I will say, if you had 2 weeks, you're probably just going to have to pick one location and kind of stick to there. I don't think you can go to all those just little ones. It just wouldn't be enough time. You want to take your time and explore these sites. That's my opinion. I've been there twice, once to Belgium and once to the Western Front in France. I always use Paris as the hub. Why not? Paris is the biggest airport, Charles de Gaulle. It's a great city. But you also have to take that into account. Do you plan on flying into Paris? Do you want to see Paris a little bit? So what I'm going to say is recommended off what I would do. So plan accordingly. But I would fly into Paris and probably go to my first city I would go to is Meaux. Now, and Meaux is just a little outside to the east of Paris, and they got, I think it's the biggest Great War Museum in the world. It's called the Museum of the Great War in Meaux. I heard it's the biggest. I can't confirm that, but it looks amazing. I've never been. I want to go. Also in Meaux, I'm saying Meaux. I watched Super Troopers. Sorry. Meaux. However you pronounce it. I'm sorry if I butcher a lot of these words, as always. They got St. Stephen's Cathedral. When I travel, I like to see cathedrals. And I'm not really a religious man, but there's something I'm overwhelmed when I see these massive cathedrals. I appreciate the craftsmanship, the art. I mean, there's just something about them. I just love seeing cathedrals. Just got back from Mexico City. I saw the cathedral in the city center and just was absolutely amazed by it. So that's my thing. I like seeing cathedrals. So I would take one day, go to Meaux, and see the Great War Museum and see the cathedral. Just spend some time in your city. Don't plan too much your first day. Just kind of just slowly work into this, because there is a lot to see if you're just going to the Western Front. From there, rent a car. I advise, don't rent it in Paris. Paris is kind of a madhouse. If you rent a car, it can be, I don't know, man. It's, you're taking a gamble. It's pretty hectic there. I would just take the train to Meow and then rent a car. You will need a car if it's the best way to see these sites. Head over, then after one day in Meow, wake up, head over east to Chateau Thierry. In Chateau Thierry, they got, well, number one, the city's pretty cool, but they got the Museum de Memorial American, and just to the northwest of that is Bellawood, and there's plenty to see and do there. So I say between Chateau Thierry and Bellawood, that can be another day. So that's 2 days right there. In fact, you know what? All right, how many days we got going on here? Why not? So that's day two. Day three, take a little break. Drive northeast to the city of Rheims. Have a little breather, because you just had 2 days of great war, monuments, battlefields, cemeteries. Go to Rheims, have a good beer. It's a really cool town. There's a lot to see. And I think they have one of the biggest cathedrals in France in Rheims. It's the Notre Dame de Rheims. Been there. I've seen it at night. It's massive. It's beautiful. The city's really cool. It's kind of a young city from what I understand. I think it's a university city. Just really fun. If I can have fun, you can have fun. So definitely just kind of take a breather there. That's day three. Day four, get up and head over to Verdun. Now, here's the thing about Verdun. I mean, you could probably easily spend 2 to 5 days there. So again, you have to map this out, how much time you want to spend in each spot. But just in Verdun alone, you've got the Museum of the Great War. I just mentioned Bellawood, which is not too far away. Navarin Ossuary, Douaumont Ossuary. Yeah, Fort Douaumont, Fort Duval, the Ainemarn American Cemetery, which it's absolutely amazing. The Meuse-Argonne American Cemetery is absolutely amazing. You got to see this thing. Vainqua Hill, Monument de Fusiliers, André Maginot Monument. Now you can see that pretty quick. You got Fort de Souville. You got Verdun Memorial. You got the Underground Citadel, the Trench of Bayonets, and more. So if I were you, I would at least, at a minimum, put 2 days into Verdun. If you could do three, it'd be better, but we'll just say we're trying to stick to maybe a 2 week timeline here. So that puts us at 5 days in France. But you can't miss Verdun. If you go to the Western Front, you have to go to Verdun. I'm sorry, but it's a must. So day six, drive over to the Somme. When I did the drive, I think it was maybe like a 3 hour drive. So I'm gonna recommend you wake up early and head over there, head to the city of Amiens. Now, Amiens is the capital city of the Somme. Very cool city, but you just had 3 days of downtime, Rheims, Meaux, Chateau Thierry. You know, you walked into this. I would say don't so much focus on Amiens, but really just focus around the Somme. And the Somme has so much to do, but I feel like you can knock it out in a day. So I would give the Somme 1 day, and you can see what they got. At the Somme, they got Thiepval Memorial to the Missing. They got Beaumont Hamel Memorial. I recommend 1 day. Maybe you want to do two. There's other stuff to do around there too. The Somme is really cool. I definitely wouldn't miss that, but I feel like you can maybe knock that out in a day. You can stay in Rheims, or once you're done there, I would probably head up to the city of Arras. Now, in Arras, I would just call this area northern France. Again, much like Verdun, there is just dozens of sites and and stuff to do there for the Great War. Maybe you want to take one day in a rest, though, another breather, because you just went to Verdun, you went to the Somme. So you know what? Let's call that one more day while they do a breather in Arras, because Arras is a really cool city too. And the more north you go in France, you start getting a lot more Belgian beer bars. So if beer's your thing, stop and have a couple Belgian beers, see the city. And there's more to do than just beer, obviously, in Arras. It's a really cool town. But I would say maybe get a breather, because you're about to see a lot the next day. And all the sites you got in northern France, I mean, again, there is dozens, but some of the ones you just can't miss. The Vimy Ridge Memorial, the preserved trenches in Vimy. You got Notre Dame de Lorette. You can't help but miss that. Absolutely amazing. You got Hill 70 Memorial. You got the Lens Great War Museum, which I don't know by size comparison, but it looks pretty big. I don't know if it's bigger than Miel's, but it looks pretty big. And there's so much more. I mean, again, this is northern France. There is dozens and dozens of Great War sites. I am just naming an absolute few. And just the few I mentioned probably easily could be a 2-day time. So again, you probably want to take, I'm going to say two to three days in northern France if you really want to play it right. So that brings us at, we got 9 days right there. And it's not far from Belgium. So then you wake up and you head north and just head into Flanders, the town of Ypres. Ypres alone, around Flanders fields, you got Sanctuary Wood. You got in Flanders Museum. You got Polygon Wood. You got the Brooding Soldier, which close by, they have the site of the first gas attack. You got Langemark Cemetery. You got Hooglied Cemetery. You got the Hoag Crater Museum. Yorkshire Trench. Essex Farm was the big ones, Menin Gate. You got the Tynecott Memorial, and more. There is a lot to do in Flanders. So I would add, again, I'm going to call this like Verdun. You could go anywhere from 2 to 5 days and probably still not see everything. So at a minimum, I'm going to say you want to at least spend 2 days in Flanders. So that's 11 days right there. I always take a day for traveling, so really I'm out of my house 13 days with the two of travel, almost 2 weeks. If you want to take another break while you're in Belgium, Bruges is right there. And by the way, just from experience, don't go to Bruges on the weekend. A lot of Europeans, the neighboring countries, and in Belgium, they go there on the weekends. It's like Disneyland. It's super crowded. My wife and I went to go rent a bike and just ride around Bruges, and we had to wait several hours just to rent a bike. So try not to go to Bruges on the weekend. But not far from there's Ghent. You can go to Brussels. Both are really cool. There's other little towns around Belgium that are awesome. So you're not going to be disappointed. Let me say that. Yeah, so the question to Jake, I gave some recommendations. Maybe at a later time, I'll put some links. I put a brochure together for somebody in the past. Maybe I'll update the brochure and post it on a future episode with a link to that. But yeah, you just got to ask yourself how much time you really want to do, what you want to do, how many sites you want to see. Is the trip solely for the Great War? Or do you want to see other stuff? Again, do you want to see Paris? Maybe you want to spend some time in Bruges. My son, you know, he just joined the Marine Corps. We were just talking about it. I wouldn't mind just going on a 2-week trip, just him and I, and just purely seeing all the war sites, because my wife doesn't want to just do that. She wants to go to Paris. She wants to shop. She wants to spend most of the time in Paris, which is cool. I love Paris, one of my favorite cities, but I want to take 2 weeks and just do the Great War at least one more time out on the Western Front. So, yeah, those are some of my recommendations. That's what I would do. And I think we said, do I have anything that I wouldn't have done? When I went to Belgium, the sites there, I was on a real time constraint. I think I said this in an episode one time. I did a guided tour. I really only had one day to go to Flanders Fields. Absolutely was not enough. The tour guide was cool. He knew his stuff. I highly recommend him if that's your thing. Very nice guy. He knew his history too. But me, I want to do it on my own. That's just me. So I wouldn't do a tour guide again just because I want to be in charge of my own tours. And I know my own history. So that's my thing. But you'll have to make that decision. So I hope that helped. I hope I answered your question. I really hope you and other listeners do take the chance to get out there and see the sights. If you haven't, you're not going to be disappointed. It's just a really good time. You really get to see the history, and you see where a lot of hundreds and hundreds of thousands of soldiers lost their lives, and it's very humbling. I highly recommend it. All right, what am I at? Oh, 15 minutes. I get a drink. All right. The next question I got was from a gentleman named Brad M. He asked for a list of movies and book recommendations. And there's so many, but I'm going to just list some movies and some books. Excuse me. I think I'm going to sneeze. Nope. Okay. Let me start with movies. Because I had that list, so I'm just trying to pull it up. Okay. Movies. These are some of the movies I've seen that I highly recommend. I thought they were really good. First one, a buy for All Quiet on the Western Front. The 79, 2022, and the 1930 version. I recommend them all. The 79 and 2022, there's a little bit different in the versions. 2022 one was great, but 79 one's still pretty good. It's got what's his name? Borgnine? Ernst Borgnine? Famous actor. Anyways, I'm sure you've seen All Quiet on the Western Front, but if you haven't, highly recommend that. That's on my top list. Next is War Horse. Came out in 2011. Absolutely great movie. I'm sure a lot of you have seen that. Next is a movie I recently watched when I was doing the Africa series. Now, Shout at the Devil, released in 1976, starring Lee Marvin and Roger Moore. I thought that was a really excellent movie, so I'm going to recommend that one. Next one came out in 2012, Private Peaceful. Then you got Joya Noel, 2005. It's the movie about the Christmas truce. Next one's one of my favorite movies. My wife and I really like this one. It's called A Very Long Engagement. It came out in 2004. It's not a full World War One movie, but it definitely is. I know it's kind of a little romance, but it is an outstanding movie. I thought it was. So I'm going to highly recommend A Very Long Engagement. I thought that was an excellent movie. Next is Testament of Youth, came out in 2014, starring Kit Harington, or better known as Jon Snow. Beneath Hill 60, released in 2010, that was a great one. Of course, you got Sergeant York, released in 1941. A lot of us have probably seen 1917, and released in 2019. It's kind of a tongue twister. Everybody's favorite actor, Mel Gibson, starred in the 1981 movie Gallipoli. Of course, A Farewell to Arms, written by one of my favorite writers of all time, Hemingway, came out in 1932, the movie. Great, great movie. Journey's End came out in 2017. That was a really good one. Now, I don't want to seem wishy-washy, but this is a great movie. Paths of Glory. Came out in 1957, and I still stand by what I say. Like, this movie would have been so much better if they would have had French actors and if it was in French. But Kirk Douglas is a good actor. He did a good job. The movie's, Stanley Kubrick made it, I think. It's an outstanding movie. But again, I think something like that, you got to have the right language. would have been that much better. Sorry, better. I'm not going to try to edit this episode, so you might hear a lot of tongue twists. Yeah, still a great movie, though. I think it's a classic. This was a good one. See You Up There came out in 2017. It's about a French soldier come back and he had to get like a new face. That was a really good one. I highly recommend. That's almost up there with A Very Long Engagement. Then you got Lawrence of Arabia, came out in 1962. Long movie, but it's good. The Grand Illusion came out in 1937. Now, I haven't actually seen this one, but it is one of the best rated World War One movies. Every time I just keep forgetting to watch it. I put something else in front of it, and next thing you know, I haven't seen it. So I am going to watch that. But it's one of the best rated World War One movies of all time. Next was another very old movie from the 30s. Actually, it was released in 1930. It's called West Front 1918. Saw that. That was pretty good. In fact, I think HBO, if you have Max, I think it's on there. Another one I got, actually, this is my last one. Last movie recommendation. I had to go out and buy this DVD because I couldn't find a way to watch it, stream it. It's called Wooden Crosses, and it was released in 1932. I thought it was a really good movie. And the cool thing about Wooden Crosses, the actors were actual French World War I veterans playing the part. So I thought that was really cool. I did a little reading on it, and that's what it said. So that's my movie recommendations if you need want to watch some World War I movies. Books, and I'll run through this pretty quick. Of course, the book that actually got me started really enjoying the Great War, the one that brought me into it, is All Quiet on the Western Front, written by Eric Maria Remarque. I read this in high school, and it just sparked that memory because I think I've said this in the podcast. I used to be a fan of like horror, gory movies. I used to read Fangoria, and I always liked history. So it's like the two of those mixed together, and I was like, oh, I like the Great War. This is cool. I can read more about this. Very fascinating. So All Quiet on the Western Front definitely is the book that got started for me. Next, really good book, The Guns of August, written by Barbara Tuchman. Probably, this could be my favorite, Storm of Steel by Ernst Jünger. Just a true warrior right there. That's all I can say. Farewell to Arms, outstanding book. Written by one of my favorite authors again, Ernest Hemingway. The Price of Glory, written by Alastair Horn. Outstanding book. I've mentioned this one before, Goodbye to All That by Robert Graves. By Lou, by Louis Barthas. July 1914, Countdown to War by Sean McMeekin. Good book. Really gives you an insight. Actually, this book, along with the next two, really gives you an insight of kind of how the war started, the political games, and what led up to it. The next one. Sorry, excuse me. I need to drink my water. The Assassination of the Archduke by Greg King and Sue Wolmans. Outstanding book. And then you got One Morning in Sarajevo by David James Smith. So you got those last three books. Oh, sorry. One more. Sleepwalkers, How Europe Went to War 1914, written by Christopher Clark. And I think actually, I recently read that one. I think that was actually recommended by a listener early on when I started this podcast. But those last four books are sort of pre-war books leading up to the Great War, and really gives you a lot of insights of what the heck happened. Just the pure soup sandwich that took place. All right, next book is Elegy by Andrew Roberts. It's a really sad story about the first day of the Somme, but a great book. The Somme, written by Lynn MacDonald, is an outstanding one. Another one by Lynn MacDonald, they called it Passchendaele. A great book right there. Next one's kind of a controversial book. It's can be considered a sort of anti-war. Now It Can Be Told by Philip Gibbs. I liked it. I thought it was really good. I don't have a problem reading those kind of books, and just telling his version of what he experienced during the, you know, his version of the Great War. Very good eye-opening book right there. Next book, Paris, 1919, written by Margaret Macmillan. Very good book of kind of what happens after. And then, of course, Gallipoli, written by the historian Peter Hart. Outstanding book. Peter's written a lot of books on the Great War. I think this is my favorite one by him, but you really can't go wrong with a Peter Hart book. So, Brad, I hope these recommendations help. I hope you watch some of these movies if you haven't seen them. I hope you pick up some of these books if you need something to read while you're out there on the road. And be safe. And thank you for writing in. Okay, last question, because where am I at? I don't want to keep this too long. This one's going to be kind of a tough question to answer. Beehive, I don't know if that's your name, but use your tag name Beehive. Basically, asked me if he stated it was clear in an episode that I did, he listened to, that I stated it was clear that France and England wanted the war to happen. He asked me if I can point him to what led me to believe this. And he believes that World War One was the last noble war. America had a legitimate reason for entering the war, or at least that's what he believed. He's writing a paper. So he just kind of asked my opinion. And I think he really was just looking for that as he's writing this paper. And I do apologize, Beehive, because I think you messaged me a little while ago. I'm not sure if you've already written it. So I'm not sure if this is going to help, but I'll try to answer this as best as I can, because this is kind of a tough question. But this is a really good question. So, you know, a question like this, you're not trying to rewrite history or change history. This is something where I think you're able just to give your opinion. I think those first four, those four books that I talked about leading up to the Great War, the assassination of the Archduke, understanding what was happening before the Great War. Heck, you have to go to the Franco-Prussian War. There's a lot of things that led up to this. And it's my opinion, and I think I've stated this in an episode before, everything that I've read, and again, just a disclaimer, this is solely just my opinion. Take it for what it's worth. I don't know. Who knows me? I don't know, Jack, you know what, sometimes. But I really felt that the overall biggest aggressor of pushing the world into war was Russia. And I don't even necessarily think it was the aristocrats that were wanting the war, because there was another book written. It was called The Letters Between Nikki and basically the letter between the Tsar and the Kaiser. But at one point, the Kaiser's kind of trying to talk the Tsar down off the ledge, saying, you know what? Let's whittle this will work out. Everything's going to be fine. That was my interpretation of it, that they kind of felt like this thing wasn't going to go to war. But everything that I've read, what points me to believe that Russia was the aggressors, the politicians, the generals, everybody, I think, but the aristocrats were actually pushing for the war. And I would just urge you to pick up some of these books and kind of form your own opinion. Don't necessarily go off what I'm saying. This is just my opinion, but you can read some of these books, especially that Sleepwalkers, and you just have to understand what was leading up to the assassination of the Archduke. Why everybody just already had taken a side. I mean, the Schlieffen Plan was written in case war broke out in Europe. There was already plans in place for this thing to happen. So I feel there was a lot of, I don't want to say all the aristocrats, because I know the royal families, them aside, but there was aristocrats, politicians, generals. They were really pushing for this thing. And I really thought, I think deep down, they thought it was going to be a quick war. They were going to get in. There was going to be a winner. Everybody would lick their wounds and kind of go home. And people would have bragging rights. You know, just going to be this whole fucking noble thing on the side. Excuse my language. But I don't think I truly don't believe that they thought it was going to turn into what it did. I think they really thought it was just going to be a quick war. But yeah. Probably not even answering your question, to be honest, but this is kind of a difficult one to answer, because you really have to form your own opinion and just really read up to what was happening before the war broke out, and things will start making a lot of sense. And it's just my belief all these politicians really push for it. Sorry, I must be thirsty. I usually drink a lot of water at night, so I need to make sure I'm doing this. The next part of this question was, you believe World War I was the last noble war that America had a legitimate reason for entering the war? That's a debatable topic, too. You know, America had their allies. I think they had to jump in and do something. I don't think they could stay on the sideline as long as they did. They probably should have gone in earlier, but they didn't. I think because they really didn't start fighting until 1917. I know troops started to arrive in 1916. They had special troops that were fighting already, some pilots, but the really actual bulk of the American force didn't start fighting until 1917. And I think the you know what was really hitting the fan. I think Germany, honestly, had a chance of winning the war if America hadn't stepped in. They put up a fight for a long time. If you think about it, they were fighting the British. They were fighting the French. Russia kind of already collapsed at this point, but they were fighting, and they were fighting good, and they were pushing. And I think they actually had a chance of maybe taking Paris, and America stepped in because they had their allies. And you're right. I think they had a legitimate reason for entering the war, and they did. And a winner was chosen. That was the Allies. Unfortunately, I say unfortunately, and I say unfortunately because bad things led to the part two. Actually, I'll get to that in a sec. Anyways, yes, I honestly do believe they had a legitimate reason for entering the war and helping their allies. Was this the last noble war? I don't even know if I call it a noble war. Again, I go back to the original kind of thing I was talking about. I mean, is there anything noble about politicians and generals urging a war that just broke out into pure hell? I honestly don't believe it was justified. If anything was justified, it was part two. Because after the truce, the Paris Treaty, which was a whole mess in its own, it really didn't end the war. I mean, all it did, and I've said this before, it pretty much just they pushed the pause button. That's all it did. And there were still aggressions from the Franco-Prussian War during those discussions. So there's longstanding issues with all these nations going back and forth. It wasn't just about to end right then and there and say, all right, no more fighting. You're right. This was the war to end all wars. Oh, no. All it did was just brew the recipe for the part two, which we all know what happened. And that one, I truly do believe it was a noble, legitimate war for the world, for the rest of the world to jump in and just say, you know what? Clearly, we can't have this madman taking over Europe. We need to jump in. So I don't know. To me, that was the last noble war. Was the Second World War. I think World War One starting was just aristocrats, politicians behaving badly, like a bunch of children. You know, they wanted to fight. They wanted to brawl on the playground, and they didn't expect it to break out to what it did. So I know I was kind of rambling there. I do apologize if I lost some people on that one. Again, Beehive, that's kind of a it's kind of a hard question to ask. I mean, I know you're writing that paper, but I would just urge you to check out some of these books. Just read a little bit on that if you haven't already. And you might answer a lot of your own questions and form your own opinions on that. Definitely don't just go off what I'm saying. That's beauty about this history. It's being able to pick up these books and you're not rewriting history. You're just forming your own opinion of why this happened. And I'm sure a lot of us have our own opinions, what we could do to prevent it from ever happening. But unfortunately, our opinions don't matter. So Mihai, thank you for sending in that message. That was a really good question. It really got me thinking. I was sitting back and like, that's what would, you know, got the brain rolling. I had to oil it up a little bit. So, yeah, folks, anyways, I got those three messages on Over the Top, A Great War Podcast's Instagram. And I was like, you know what? Let me just take these questions and have a little podcast about it. I hope you guys got some good recommendations for traveling if you want to see the Great War. Hopefully you got some good recommendations to the movies and the books. And I know that last question, I probably did some injustice. You're probably rambling and you're probably saying I'm a jackass, which I probably am. But it's just a complex question. It's kind of hard to answer. Again, you just have to form your own opinion about it. And that's not rewriting history. That's just forming an opinion why it happened. Yeah, folks. So if you tuned in, you enjoyed this, I appreciate that. You listeners are the best. Thank you for sending me these messages. The more messages I get, if I get a lot of these, I'll continue to do these questions and answers. This is fun. I'm not scripting this. I literally just plugged in, started recording, aside from writing down some movies and books, and I'm probably not even going to edit this. So just on here recording, being me, and that's what you get. You get the you get the unscripted me, which I don't know if that's good or bad. But yeah, I hope this was fun. These great questions. Please keep sending them in and I'll do this. All right, folks. Until the next episode, which is going to be Verdun, I promise. I'm already working on it. Take care, everyone.